A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are men.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell, and you're listening to Arrow Squad, the podcast that is more arrowy than other podcasts and certainly greener. And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
Welcome back to Arrow Squad. Happy New Year, everybody. Happy New Year,
Happy
Cammy.
New Year.
I am The Flash.
And I'm Cammy, and I'm so excited to be back. Oh my goodness.
me too. Was that a bit of a surprise intro?
It was. I kind of was like, oh, I wonder if we're going to hear the Juliana one again. Are we doing it? And then the Stephen Amell one came on. We haven't heard that in quite a while, so I was pretty excited to hear that.
Yeah, I thought I'll throw it in. I'm actually going to do a little mix down with that one and Juliana so I can have them both.
Yeah. Who knows who we'll get next.
Totally. Welcome back, everybody, to our show. This is Arrow Squad Season 6, Episode 10, with titled Divided. Wow. We got any news to kick off? It's been a while since we've been on air here.
It has been a while. Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited. I haven't been this excited to, like, be back after a break than, like, in a long while. So this is pretty cool. And we actually don't have a lot of news, just the general Arrow is back stuff. So we have the same schedule. Arrow is still going to be airing at 9 p.m. on Thursdays. And we have the same feedback schedule here for the podcast. So submit anytime till, you know, Friday midnight-ish, maybe Saturday morning if you slide it in there early. Yeah. And we'll have the same posting schedule for the podcast. It'll go up, you know, at some point during the weekend, sometimes Saturday night, sometimes Sunday night.
Exactly. Yep. Nothing changes for us. And
yep.
I'm totally with you, Cammy. I am excited. It's felt like a really long hiatus for some reason.
And yeah.
Just getting, you know, getting ready to watch all our shows return, I was excited and pumped. So this was, and you know, with the, I'm just going to dive right into it. Let's get right into our ratings over impressions, because this is
absolutely
when I'm kicking it off, because I absolutely loved this episode. And as I was saying, it felt like a really long holiday break. Just knowing Arrow was coming back got me ready, got me pumped, because of how great it's been all season so far. And this episode definitely didn't disappoint for me in the slightest. So I give it a 9 out of 10 choking arrows. this episode was so good, because comparing to the other shows, like, I hate to say it, but Flash was barely a fizzle this week. I'm really feeling let down by Flash this season. Its return episode just felt like a rehash of old ideas.
Strongly agree.
Yeah, but we're not here to talk Flash, but I do want to also mention that Supergirl, on the other hand, because a lot of fans know that I have not been impressed with that show all season 3 and most of season 2.
Mm-hmm.
But this episode this week, its return episode, was the best of its season. It almost felt like a season 1 episode. So I was quite happy with that. So here we come to Arrow's turn, and I was waiting with bated breath. Please be good. Please be good. And it was, because can it keep going as strong as it was in its first half? Yep, it sure did. Like, it never missed a beat or had any time off. I loved the slow burn of the buildup of everything going on, like the discovery of being bugged, the eventual not getting the team back together moment, the Oliver solo action sequences, and Diggle getting his arm control back, like losing the jitters. This episode felt like a double length one to me with how much was happening. I was sitting there going, I kept checking the display on my player, like, what? Oh, I'm only at the 35 minute mark. What? Like, I figured I was in an hour and a half already, because there was so much happening and it was so in depth and I was so hooked on it. It felt like a really long episode. There's a lot going on, a lot of moving parts, but it all flowed so seamlessly and felt connected. And with all that build up, it still paid off really well in the end.
Oh yeah, that ending. I think I know why it felt like a bit of like a longer episode, or I guess like more content, is because there weren't flashbacks.
That's a good point. Yeah, that could be exactly why.
Yeah. awesome. You give it a 9 out of 10. That's a really high rating.
Yeah, it's Arrow's been flying high. It really has.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this episode. I mentioned me and The Flash were talking a little bit before we started recording, and I mentioned that my rating might not really reflect how much I actually enjoyed this episode, because I gave it a 7.3 out of 10. But I really enjoyed this episode, and the reason – and a 7.3 is not really that low, especially for me.
That's a high Cammy score, yeah.
Yeah. But the reason it's not, you know, perhaps a little higher, the reason why it's not like an 8 or an 8.5 is because I found myself questioning throughout and after if I was enjoying the parts that they meant for me to enjoy. Because I, for example, I found myself loving the season one dynamic of having Oliver fight alone in the field. You know, we really got to see our title hero shine. It felt like his show. And I'm not always somebody who loves Oliver. Like, I like a lot of the side characters better often. And so in this episode, we really got to see him shine. And I felt like I was really rooting for him in the way, you know, we want to root for a title hero. But it seemed like we were supposed to find that tense and uncomfortable and want more people out there with him. Like, want, you know, the other trio that had left to be out there supporting him. And I didn't want that. And I also loved the dynamic of, you know, OTA working long hours together to take down this team, and loved that struggle. Like, it was a real struggle. You know, we got to see all their skills highlighted and in some fun new ways, and you know, like the T-Sphere gaming and so on. And even though Diggle was incapacitated, we did, you know, get the fantastic moment of him getting his hand back in the end that I think you and I both loved. Mm-hmm. But while I enjoyed that, I felt like we were supposed to be rooting for the new team to return, and I wasn't. And, you know, I thought Curtis just being around briefly to help with tech was fine. And I thought Dinah taking some time to figure out for herself that Vince was playing her made sense, because she's independent. And, you know, I wanted her to have that journey for herself. And I think Wild Dog's behavior does not warrant a redemption storyline. So I'm thrilled to see him gone, if only temporarily. So the areas where we were supposed to find tension, I found to be a relief. And so I kind of wondered if what I'll see going forward is something I'll actually enjoy, or if I'll see resolutions to things that I don't want to be resolved. That's really the only thing bumping it down from being, you know, almost as high as your rating, honestly. But I really love the episode.
That's interesting. Like, I see where you're coming from and some of your feelings, and a lot of your points we're going to talk about within the rest of our show notes here. But the one thing I wanted to pull from what you said, which is kind of interesting. You said you were watching Oliver out in the field by himself and he's getting overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. It kind of felt like, you know, the Arrow of old, where he always was the only one in the field. So we're rooting for him, and we're like, yeah, go, go, go. And you're thinking, well, wait a second, it's 1 against 30. Where's his team? What's going on? Like that thought comes into your mind that you're thinking, okay, he needs backup. But at the same time, you're like, no, you know what? I want to watch Oliver do this on his own, because it's been a long time since we've done it. So I kind of get that feeling that you're describing, that it was a very on the fence 50-50 feeling, like, well, we're not quite ready to have our team back because of everything that's going on. And I'm really enjoying Oliver right now, taking everybody on by himself, because we haven't seen that in a long time. And I think the biggest draw to that is we actually haven't seen that all season long, because for most of season six, he's been the mayor in the office, and we have not seen him suit up much. So this, I think, really slapped us in the face with how awesome it was to see again.
Yeah, I agree.
Totally. And I think I actually talk about that later, but yeah, there's a lot of points we'll talk about later, but Still, 7.3 is actually pretty high for you, so it was a good episode.
I was just going to say, I'm going through, and I think we actually have a couple pre-show feedback submissions from Aaron, but do we need any reminders or anything about what the episode was about? Because it has been quite a while since we last talked about the mid-season finale.
Right. If she's got a couple strong points, that was quite a few weeks ago. So, yeah, if she has a couple strong points, let's bring them up about how our mid-season finale ended.
Okay, so we have two. One is the longer one, sort of covering all of points of the podcast, and then one is a response to our last podcast.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll just go through briefly and cover this. She starts off by saying she thinks Oliver and John definitely owe Diana an apology, and Felicity as well, because she knew it was spying, and it wasn't just spying because Diana needed help, but because they were questioning her, which is a really good point, because that may be an important differentiation, is surveillance to help somebody versus surveillance because you don't trust somebody. So she goes on to sort of agree with us on, in our last podcast episode, we had talked about how we felt Dinah was treated unfairly, especially in comparison to how Wild Dog was treated, who is the person who actually betrayed the team, and Dinah did not betray the team.
Right.
And then she goes on to say, in regards to Renee, she wished that Oliver had just said, I gave you another chance and let me down, instead of the whole, like, disobedience comment, because that might have felt a little weird, you know, with Oliver and Renee trying to function sort of as peers on a team, and the concept of disobedience is not really peerish. She also says she missed Quentin Lance and Donna Smoke together. I think we all did. That was so cute. She had some questions about why Black Siren owes Caden, which hopefully begin to be answered in these upcoming episodes. And she says that was a fair point about Renee and how the team was helping him get his daughter, so it's even worse that he turned on them. I have some really strong opinions about that we'll get into. And she says if Renee does leave, they might replace him with a redeemed Vincent. Which is a really interesting question. We'll put a pin in that as well.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I'm a little curious to hear what your thoughts are as we get into this about the dynamic of Dinah and Vincent in this episode. Okay. She also thinks it might be interesting to see Evelyn be touched on again, and a few other things about, like, just questions about the Black Siren thing and some of the character points that we had, and about Argus that hopefully we'll cover in our upcoming discussion. So she goes on with a few more points that we'll hopefully cover in our upcoming discussion, or just things that were more salient to last episode. She ends by saying Felicity was smoking in her dress, which I agree. Thanks, Aaron, for that feedback.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Well, that's kind of a good refresher from all the weeks off that we've had, and kind of a lot of what you were talking about will definitely drive us into what was going on in this episode. So that actually worked out really well. So thanks.
Yeah. And then we had one more bit of short feedback that came after our last podcast. This is from Justin. He said he loved the podcast, disagrees with the rating. He'd give it a little bit lower, a 6 or maybe even a 5.5, because he didn't like the Elicity stuff. He wants Oliver to end up with Laurel. I guess he's an Oliver and Laurel shipper. That's cute. Or maybe he means Black Siren. I don't know. Laurel has, I hope this isn't like a spoiler if he's perhaps a bit behind, but Laurel is not with us, unfortunately. I don't know.
Yeah.
He says he hopes Felicity dies. That's okay.
Ouch. You're gonna have some fans not liking you.
Yeah, I really don't hope that Felicity dies. I hope she lives. But he says he loved the second half of the episode, especially the Quentin and Laurel stuff. I think he means Quentin and Black Siren there. And he's excited for that relationship. Also excited to see the villain team. Seems like an adaptation of the Longbow Hunters arc from Green Arrow comics. And he's excited to see what Dinah Curtis and Renee do from here. So hopefully he'll be pleased to see in the most recent episode that they form their little trio.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, it's good to hear from you, Justin. It's awesome to always have someone. I don't know if we've heard from you yet, so if you're new, it's great to have you on board here. Very, very strong opinions there about Felicity, so we'll have to see see the reactions you might get to that. But that's okay. Everyone's allowed to have their likes and dislikes and opinions for
sure. Different opinions
but
are a good thing.
I think when he's talking about Oliver ending up with Laurel, he might be wondering if Black Siren will have a redemption story, and part of that will be her getting with Oliver. So maybe that's the line he's hoping it takes.
I know we when we got more into our feedback from this week, there were a few people kind of frustrated with Lance being so hung up on Black Siren looking like Laurel, even though she's from a different Earth. Mm-hmm. And one of the points that somebody made to me on Twitter was, you know, when we had our big crossover event and we saw Earth to Quentin, who was, you know, a complete villain, like evil Nazi trying to kill people. The point was there made that this is not Quentin in any way. It's just somebody who looks like him. And I think the same can kind of be said for Black Siren. You know, we're fortunate to see, you know, a familiar face, but in sort of a dark villainy role. And I think that's really fun. But I don't know. I think the way they've set up this world is that the Earth 2 people are not the Earth 1 people at all. So I don't know. I'm curious to see, but I understand that sort of.
I think we're going to cover a little bit of that later on in our show too. So let's get to our favorite moments. How's that?
Absolutely. Yes. You want to kick us off?
I will now. All right. So I seriously, or as Stephen Mel says, sincerely, am really struggling to pick just one single moment out of these amazing episodes we were having this season. In fact, I don't think I've actually been able to, have I?
I don't think so. I think you have two or even three most weeks, huh?
Yeah. So once again, there was an awesome action sequence. Oliver's first solo one where he went to get Kate and James after Felicity tracked him down to that whatever warehouse or building that they were in. And he takes everyone out showing some new skills, some new arrows and counters to Kaden. That choking double arrow he shot right at Siren's throat was awesome. What a way to counter her power before she's able to scream. It was awesome.
That was really funny.
Was funny, and I thought it was actually pretty genius. Like, it shows Oliver learning from being in the field against her how to counter her attacks. Fantastic. One of my favorite arrow creations so far. I also loved the big action sequence in the empty warehouse later at the end of the episode, but we'll get into that in our talking points. So, for my soundbite moment, I'm going to bring us back to when Oliver ran into an alarm trip that ended up being the shipping port owner, Jerry Bernelli. Yeah. And as he states how hard it is to find Green Arrow, that he should consider a website or a signal of some kind. And I think we all know exactly what we're referring to, but this was just priceless. So here it is.
Hey, can you stand down? I just needed to get your attention. You're a hard man to find. You ever consider a website? Maybe a spotlight in the sky? A big silhouette of an arrow? What do you want?
It cracked me up. I loved it. I absolutely loved that.
I love that the show is getting a little more obvious about making Batman references.
I think actually someone during the Facebook post, someone actually added a picture from the comic books of a Green Arrow symbol in the sky, and Green Arrow was making a crack about it or something. So that was quite fun to see. But I just loved it. It was just funny. You're a hard guy to track down. Like, come on.
Perhaps a website might be more appropriate, but the spotlight in the sky thing, it's pretty cool, huh?
But I did have another scene after that, but it appears that the other one I was going to play is also your favorite scene, so I will let you take point on that one.
Hey, great minds think alike. Exactly. My favorite moment from this week, I felt like it didn't have a ton of audio, but then I was thinking my runner-up, which has no audio, so we'll go with my favorite. The highlight this week for me was definitely the bit at the end, seeing Diggle get his hand back. I think after an episode of seeing OTA struggle with fewer bodies in the field and seeing how Oliver was relying so hard on Diggle and Felicity, which was tense but sort of heartwarming, it was really rewarding to see Diggle finally have that recovery, and the reactions of the trio in those final moments was priceless. And at this point, we had waited quite a while for this. Like, this has been a long ongoing story for Diggle. They didn't rush this, and so it made the, you know, recovery that much more rewarding.
Mm-hmm. And I've got a sound clip from it. There's not a lot of talking, but still, it's the way the episode ended, and it was just a fantastic ending to a great episode. So here it is.
Does it feel any different?
Well, it takes a minute.
Or not.
It worked.
Sean.
Yes.
Yeah.
So good, right?
What was so cool about it was the way they filmed it. The way the camera kept swinging back around, the way when Oliver threw him the gun, and it just it was such a cool moment. I think that was probably Diggle's best hero moment he's ever had. Even though he wasn't really doing anything, it was such a heroic, triumphant return kind of feeling. And it's like, yes, I cheered. Woo! It was fun. It was a really, really cool moment.
Absolutely. We've talked a lot about like balance on this show between things like action and emotional moments, family moments and all that. And I think that moment really showed such pristine balance, because in the span of such a short time, you get like tension, action, family feels, excitement. It was everything all in one, which is really nice to see.
Yeah. And I'll agree with that. Like the point that you had brought up, and I can't remember if I wrote this later on in notes, but I'm going to say it here now, is that they didn't solve this very quickly. Like it took a while for Diggle to lose the tremors, which I really loved. I love that they're taking their time with some of these things. I think I talk about it later in the notes. I don't want to say too much now, but
I think we do have that a bit in the notes.
Yeah.
We can get more into that too, but yeah. I think that is important in terms of both balance and pacing.
Exactly. But you have a second, you actually came up with a couple yourself. You've got a runner up,
I did have a runner-up, and the runner-up has no audio. That's actually the whole point of the runner-up. It was when Felicity figured out the cave was bugged and texted Diggle rather than just saying out loud, like, oh, I think we're bugged or whatever. Because I'm so used to, in shows in general, just seeing characters immediately jump to the reaction of, like, find the bug and rip it off the wall, or immediately be like, shh, I think we're bugged, somebody's listening, or whatever. And it was just nice to see that we got that smart moment of like, oh, we know this. We're going to be like quiet and careful about it and like use this to our advantage. And it showed, you know, it's a small detail, but it showed an air of experience and calm knowledge. You see these as like seasoned team members, like they know what to do if they're bugged. And I thought that fit in so nicely with the overall theme of this episode of like old team versus new team, and you know, the more calm reactions versus the more like impulsive side. So it was a good touch.
Yeah. Well, based on experience, I mean, that Felicity was just quick thinking on her feet. Once she finally realized what was causing the interference, she was very quick on her feet to deal with the situation. And it was a great little moment. And just with her and Diggle, that, you know, there's a bit of tension in the air, but it was a great reveal. And again, I'm enjoying what they're doing with how they're writing answers to all these things we've been questioning all season long. And we'll definitely get into that. So,
well, it sounds like we're ready to get into discussion points.
I think so. We keep highlighting points we want to talk about, but we've got them laid out in a certain order. So let's get into those.
All right, so let's start with our sort of villain of the week / mission of the week, which was Caden and crew versus the Bertinelli mission. Mm-hmm. So adding to the already full lineup of what we were calling the Injustice League, the League of Villains.
Yeah, we don't have any.
We now have, we now have another villain in town, which is Bertinelli, but this time he's on Oliver's side, or he wants Oliver on his side, I guess. So what did you think of this angle of, you know, the whole enemy of my enemy is my friend thing?
Well, so first off, this is the first time we're seeing him, isn't it? This Jerry Bertinelli character.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I didn't know who he was, but then when he decided to christen one of his ships, the Huntress, mm-hmm. I am guessing that probably got a lot of fans all up in the "is she coming back" excitement.
Right.
Because we haven't seen her. Was it been season two since we've seen the Huntress? So
I think so. She had an arc in season one and an arc in season two.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I really like this enemy of my enemy is my friend angle. You know, with Oliver on his own out there right now, he had to use whatever advantage and angles he could. And I don't really see Bertinelli as any kind of threat himself. I mean, he owns the shipping docks. Not a major criminal. He's not really going out and doing a lot of stuff that, you know, maybe Caden James or these other criminals are, where they're terrorizing the city. He's probably doing illegal transports of stuff, but he's not a big threat himself. that Arrow really has to take him down at this moment. So,
right. I think as well with the nature of, you know, we're kind of in a gray area right now where like even the heroes are doing bad things, or, you know, we recently found out one of the greatest threats to Oliver was somebody on his team rather than a villain. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we're sort of in the quintessential Arrow-esque gray area in terms of partnering with villains. While Team Arrow is split apart, though, Caden's team is still pretty stuck together. But did you have any standout villains or standout villain moments from this week or from any of the fights?
Well, I think you're going to be pleased to hear this episode. It kind of put me on your side when it comes to Richard Dragon. I know you were just not taken with him at all.
Right.
The last couple of times we've talked about him. And this episode, I actually found that he was underwhelming and not convincing as anyone special. He just felt like a hired gun hand to me.
Yeah.
So I was agree. And it's too bad because that actor has been good on other shows like Fringe and, mm-hmm. and wherever else he's been. So I just felt like, man, they're not really using him.
Yeah.
And he kind of just, he just seemed like an annoying, tough guy. I don't know. Anyway, so I'm kind of with you there right now at this moment of him. So I hope more for him.
I think whatever vibe they're writing for him is like, I don't know if it's intentionally annoying or it just comes off that way, which like he's a villain. So I get it. But it's not like annoying in the way where it's like, you know, you had Prometheus who gets under your skin and is like annoying in a good villainy way. Dragon is like, oh my goodness, why is this guy here? Like, yeah, you don't know. Well, I don't know.
Especially when we first got introduced to him and I looked up a bit of the history on who Richard Dragon was and we talked about it, that he's not living up to what I researched. So I don't know what their plans are with him. Maybe they just got too many players on the scene right now. Maybe if Caden goes down, he might take over. We'll see. Who knows? Did you notice Black Siren's new hairdo? That kind of stood out right away.
I definitely noticed that. That was definitely different.
Yeah, I think she looked fine. The one thing I didn't like was the nose ring. I hope that's them and not Katie Cassidy doing it in real life and she just refused to take it out. I'm not a fan of body piercing like that, but that's just me. You know, whatever. No, everyone else can do what they want. I just didn't think it looked good on her.
Yeah, I don't really care usually one way or the other when it comes to body piercing. It just felt very cliche. And I felt like they already go a little bit cliche with her costume, with like they always put her in a super dark lip and super dark eye makeup and like leather and strappy stuff and like, you know, the hair and the everything. It's just very like cliche. So adding things like a nose ring and even darker hair is just like, okay, we get it, she's a villain. Like, you don't need to like literally paint her black from head to toe.
Exactly. And that's not taking anything away from her performance, because as always she was killing it. Yeah,
like, but body positivity, everybody's beautiful, has nothing to do with that.
Yeah Our Arrow show is just too beautiful for its own good. But if I had to pick one villain, because you asked me if any stood out, this episode villainy award goes to Vigilante.
Ooh.
For two reasons, actually. And I only wrote one down here, but he was working his way back into Dinah, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. I don't think she was fully biting up. But anyway, I mean, he was working that angle, so good on him. But where I really award him this standout villain was that he was able to get the upper hand on Oliver and take him down in that big fight at the end. So they're definitely building up a rematch in the works with that, because I mean they're very equal style, you know, hand-to-hand fighters. So the fact that he was able to take Oliver down and have him pinned against that ledge there, that's like, whoa, okay. I was impressed, and he played the part well. He didn't feel like something just tossed in on the side at the last 2 minutes of an episode. He was fully involved in this episode and had a good story written around him. So yeah, he definitely was a standout for me.
Yeah. I felt like at first, and honestly throughout, in terms of personality and his written dialogue, it felt like they were doing the same thing with him that we've commented that they've done with other characters, where it kind of feels like a personality like reboot. Mm-hmm. Where this is not the same type of dialogue that we've seen him have with Oliver and some of the others before, or even the same type of dialogue we've seen him have with Dinah. It's like they now have a certain storyline in mind and they're kind of writing his dialogue towards that. But in terms of, and that's, you know, perhaps this will be even better than the previous personality they'd written for him. I don't know. But in terms of fight scenes, I thought his fight scenes were pretty interesting, especially compared to what else we were working with this week, which felt like a lot of villains were either underutilized or just not standouts in the field. And which made sense because a lot of the fight scenes were all about highlighting Oliver's skills. And, you know, you mentioned the whole, like, the choking arrow, which I thought was so fun, or any of the other, you know, interesting moves. I know you will get into the T-spheres because I think you had a different opinion than me on the T-spheres, but we had these different things that were being highlighted on the hero side. And consequently, we had a lot of villains around, but not really having a moment to shine, which is fine. Let's get into the T-spheres though. I thought it was interesting. Now I generally like tech and interesting techy things on this show, at least. I thought it was interesting seeing the T-spheres kind of being in play on both sides, as well as seeing how they could be sort of remotely controlled video game style. It kind of gave Diggle something to do while he was still recovering as well. I'm not so sure you were sold though. What did you think about the T-spheres?
Yeah, see, I liked the T-spheres. I liked that cool tech, and I liked that it's Curtis's tech. Where you say interesting, I say, because what I found is with Diggle using them and Caden using them, it kind of takes away the one thing that made Mr. Terrific cool on his own. Those are his standout feature. So I don't like that anyone can have one, anyone can control it. It minimized the effect of them for me, because that's Mr. Terrific. Without those, he's just a guy in a funny leather suit. That's his signature, using the T-spheres, creating tech that no one else has. So this is the point that kind of actually bugged me and made me knock it down from a 10. It was because everybody has T-spheres. Hey, let's all play with T-spheres. It took that away from Curtis, and I didn't like that.
Yeah. Do you think they might be doing that because he's going to be written out or anything, perhaps?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're going to write Curtis out. I think he's too integral right now to the team, and that's why. And we'll also get a little more into that with him helping Felicity and Diggle, even though they're splitting away from them. Right. I think Curtis is here to stay for sure. If they had an angle on it, I'm thinking that he might figure out a way to nullify anyone else's version of it, and he'll have like the superior T-spheres is what I'm hoping, because I don't want him to lose that. That's what everybody knows Mr. Terrific from the comic books. It's like I said, it's his signature, it's his thing. Don't take that from him. It's like, I don't know it'd be like taking spider webs away from Spider-Man. Hey, everyone can shoot spider webs. You know what I mean? It's just like,
I understand.
Having a lot of archers out there, like, okay, well, now Oliver's not so fancy because everyone has fancy arrows, and, you know, anyway, that's my point.
That's kind of how I felt when they started bringing on a lot of metas onto this show who were pretty strongly powered. It kind of started to feel like Oliver became a little bit irrelevant, or like he couldn't throw a punch without like five people standing back up, which is why I kind of enjoyed this episode. And that makes sense that the same would hold true for any of the other heroes, including Curtis. But despite all of that, I think the fight scenes were interesting because they had to balance showing Oliver, you know, being the hero who we've seen, you know, we all remember season one, season two, he can take on a lot of bad guys at once. That's supposed to be his thing. While still showing that he is outnumbered, do you think they found that balance?
Well, I'll tell you, I think this is where the episode stood on its head. Both action sequences were amazing. We hadn't had that for a long time, and it was awesome. And it's like I was saying earlier, we've gone most of the season with Oliver just being in the mayor's office. So to see him still be able to do that on his own, to me, was so satisfying. So you feel it was balanced or they totally tipped the scales in his favor to really highlight that he can still do this, I don't care. It was so satisfying. I totally enjoyed that. And that's where this episode really shined.
Yeah. Did the fight scenes feel kind of season one-ish to you?
I guess in a sense, maybe in a callback feeling a little bit, that you know, with talking about him being able to do that on his own. But I think it had season five and season six vibes kind of built in. I mean, the flow of the choreography department, the experience that they've got over the 6 years, it was filmed way better. And then within our story, the experience of the characters, they're better trained in their moves, like Oliver being able to counter the people he's faced before and learn from that and counter them. He's better in his own experience. So I'd say these are better than season one fight scenes. The same kind of feeling, but done way better.
Yeah. I mean, he's supposed to, at this point, have more experience. Mm-hmm. And he also has more experience working with Diggle and Felicity as well. So he, you know, that trio as a whole should be functioning even better than season one, season two, which is kind of already getting into our next point, which is about the trio, about that right. half of the team that still remains. You know, the title divided, as it would suggest, the team was split this week into the old and new trios. Initially, for most of the episode, in fact, we see that only the old trio continues to fight against the, I'll just keep calling them the Injustice League. Did you expect this?
I kind of did.
Yeah.
I'm actually getting a little tired of some of these shows making this big dramatic impact of something and then pretty much erasing it with something quick and simple, like a real fast solution the next week, the very next episode, with there being no real consequence. So, and this is what we were highlighting earlier on, I'm very glad to see this play out a while, that they won't just kiss and make up and back to normal. There was some serious breach of trust, lives are put in danger, families put in danger, and it can't be waved away with, let's just have a clean slate. That doesn't imbue trust again. It feels empty. So I had actually hoped that things continued to be uneasy, as I said. It breathes real life into our show with these people. It makes it feel more real that these are actual relationships we're dealing with. What surprised me was that 5 weeks have passed.
Yeah. And that was a bit of a jump.
Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, that kind of keeps us in line with what time of the year we're in. Essentially we had almost that many weeks off. Right. So it was interesting that, okay, 5 weeks have passed. So there's a lot that's gone on. You know, we were just kind of catching up to both teams and the state of where everything is at, which is okay. I mean, and that's fine. And it kind of led into the drama of the storyline, what was happening in this episode. But yeah, I'm glad they're taking their time and not fixing things real quick with Band-Aids and no explanation and no consequence.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad that they're not just immediately fixing it that fast as well, I think. I mean, for at least one third of the trio, I don't want it fixed at all, of course. But I also wanted the time to see Oliver, Diggle, and Felicity have to kind of work together and, you know, focus on their team and their relationships with each other. I think the only thing that surprised me was seeing that the new team, the people who've left that trio, weren't trying to help even at all. Like I guess, you know, because they're all compromised as well, they're all at risk as well. And they were just, you know, relying on the old team to like take down the bad guys and like protect them and the rest of the city, and weren't trying, you know, like by the end of this episode we see them, you know, try to form their own team or whatever, which I have thoughts on that too. But I guess I was, you know, because Curtis at least was still trying to like help with Diggle's tech with Felicity, and I guess I was just surprised to see that like they all just left and immediately assumed like the old team would take care of it. Like there was an actual mission that they were working on. They were all compromised because of Renee as well.
Yeah. Well, I think, and this is where the 5 week gap of time comes in. It seemed to me like they all were trying to get back to a regular life. Like Renee has his daughter. So he's like, I'm going to focus on this right now, build a life for me and her. So that's what he's been doing for 5 weeks.
Assumes that the old team is still going to protect him and his daughter, which I mean, they do. Like, they're all working long hours, staying up all night, doing all that, trying to protect the city and those in it, including like Renee and his daughter, who tried to get them sold out to prison. You know, I mean, I like it in terms of this shows the morals that OTA has. Like, there's some true heroism in this that, like, I know I always go on about loving the villains, but like, I do love getting to see that sort of like selfless heroism. And they definitely show that for Oliver, Digwell, and Felicity here. I guess I was just surprised that really outside of Curtis, we didn't see that from the other trio, unless we are to believe that Dinah is also sort of like investigating Vincent a bit, which, like, I definitely agree with you that I think she was just sort of like testing the waters and seeing where he was at. And so I can kind of buy that, like, at least Curtis and Dinah were trying to do something. I don't know. Well, I shouldn't be disappointed by Renee because I have like no expectations for him, but like, there was something really odd about that.
You got to remember how it ended. I mean, it ended with them all breaking up and leaving. So that was some serious tension. There's a lot of emotions flying around. I think they're all just staying away. Like I said, these characters are very real, very lifelike, and they're just, okay, that was a really, really harsh breakup of the team. So they're staying apart from each other for a while to let everything simmer down, whatever. Renee goes back to his life with his daughter. He's got something to do. He's got a reason for doing what he did. Dinah, she's a cop. Well, she's working. She just went back to work. She even said to Vincent, like, I stopped being the canary 5 weeks ago. Like, that's where we learned it. It's been 5 weeks. She just decided to give up the superhero part of her life. I'm going to focus on being a cop. That's my job. That's my duty to the city. I'm doing that.
Right.
Curtis is the one that's kind of wavering. He's obviously still been talking to Felicity. They got their company they're putting together, and he's just living his life. We saw his apartment, so... You know, he's the one that's been kind of wavering back and forth. He still cares about them because they've been his friends for a long time, and that's why he's still helping Digwell stuff out.
Yeah, for longer than the rest of them.
I just think it's just 5 weeks of them, like, just like, okay, that was a crazy breakup. Let's just get back to something that we can focus our energy on because I don't want to deal with that. You know, it's very real to me, and that's why I am okay with everything that's going on, the situation we're in. We just got caught up to where everyone is at after 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. From the breakup. Mm-hmm. And I was, I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah. Well, while everyone else was doing their thing, Oliver, Digwell, and Felicity were still working on this, which kind of leads to my next question. So Digwell's out of commission till his hand is repaired at this point. So we see Oliver out in the field quite a bit, but Digwell and Felicity still get to be involved in the fight remotely. We kind of already talked a little bit about the T-spheres, but other than that, what did you feel about the integration of like tech, remote help, all of that, having two people out of the field and only one in the field? Did you feel like the trio was functioning well? Did you like their development across the episode?
Yeah, and that's where it felt like old OTA. I mean, Digwell didn't always go out in the field in the beginning with Oliver. He kind of stayed behind to help Felicity out. So it had a good old nostalgic feeling to it. And I found everything was balanced well with the tech on the show, and how, because I prefer balance on Arrow. I don't like over the top tech, and when I say over the top, I mean if anyone saw the newest what's that secret agent movie, The Kingsman, the sequel.
Oh yeah,
the tech in that was over the top with the robotic dogs and all that kind of stuff. That's over the top tech that takes it out of reality and makes it a little too silly for me. So Arrow is. This did not have over-the-top tech. They did not go all-out guns blazing as well. It was a really good mix of them both. And this show really uses that mix really well. And that's what I love about Arrow being, for the most part, most of the time, being very grounded as much as they can be with a superhero show. Grounded in reality and trying to make it feel as real as it could be. And that... Yeah, I thought they always do a good job with that, and especially in this episode, it was balanced perfectly for me.
Yeah, I loved it. I was dying to see Digwell back out there, but I loved the balance, the way, you know, with two people in the cave and one person out fighting, the one person being, you know, the main title hero, leader of the team. It made sense. I was just dying to see Digwell back out there.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm glad they're not rushing it, like we talked about before.
Yeah. Like I guess I should say what I'm feeling there too. Like I'm with you. I wanted to see Diggle out there again, but again, I'm glad, like you just said, that they're not rushing it. Kind of like they did with Felicity and her broken back in the wheelchair. It seems like they've learned from that. And that's why I'm really liking what they've done with Diggle. It's taken time. He's not going to get over these tremors for a while. They're trying to figure it out. They're coming up with solutions. And it's failing. So they're having to tweak and fix. And yeah, it's great. It feels way better flow to our overarching storyline of things that are happening in the background. So yeah.
Well, as the trio kind of develops through the episodes, they sort of learn two things. They realize the new trio is still at risk, which I guess they already knew, but they were trying to just protect them from afar. And they also realize they could use more help in the field as they try to take down bad guys who are after all six of them. Because at this point, you've got one guy, Oliver, trying to protect the entire city and six people, only two of which are helping him. So they go, they have the meeting, and the apology is turned down. What did you think of, I guess, both sides in that truce meeting? I know we're still talking about OTA right now, but what did you think of the truce meeting?
Okay, well, I was able to see both sides, actually. I know you're a little bit more upset about things than I am, but I think they both had good reason to feel what they were feeling. You may think the noobs were being whiny babies, but they were
only
also,
some of them.
Yeah, but they're also kind of being treated like kids and not equal members of the team. Sure, OTA has been there longer and their experience and time in the field should count for something, but they were the leaders and the noobs respected that. I don't think OTA gave them similar respect back, as each of them have proven themselves worthy of their trust. Maybe not Renee all the time, but worthy field partners, and as well, they have all had previous experience before they joined the team. Dinah was a cop for a long time. She's got great field experience and detective skills. Wild Dog was on his own, being his own little vigilante, so he can handle himself out there. And Curtis in the lab, long time ago, like working with Felicity at Palmer Tech and stuff. So what I did respect, though, was Oliver, him not even arguing their decision. He accepted it right away and said, all right, be careful out there. Good luck. That was huge of him to be able to do. Felicity, not so big. She reacted emotionally and was kind of snobby towards them. And yeah, so yeah, I was able to see both sides of it. I was able to swing back and forth and understand where both sides are coming from, what both sides are deciding. I was totally okay with all that. That's why I'm not very upset with things the way they ended up happening this episode.
Yeah.
Felicity was a little bit, she kind of bugged me a little bit. Like she was acting like we're the parents of this group kind of thing. And like she just had this bit of snobby attitude that was actually getting under my skin just a tiny, tiny little bit. But what I did like was when they discovered the bug, how the writers wrote around that, because we've heard enough of our listeners complaining about why didn't they scan the entire, why wouldn't you search for that? And everyone's really upset like that the Arrow Cave would have a bug in it and they wouldn't even know. Well, I love how they wrote around all that. The fact that the chip in Diggle's arm was causing the interference, so they could figure that out. And the fact that they said that Diggle himself said they were so busy looking for what Siren may have stolen that they didn't even think to look for what she may have left behind. And it makes great sense to me. And I hope it calms down all the screaming about not looking for a camera that was way up in the rafters, which I keep having to remind everybody. So I really like what they're doing, how they're solving all that. They're bringing everything around and figuring it out. It does make sense with how intense, if you put yourself in that situation, when Siren broke into the bunker with her team and is destroying the place, and it looks like she's trying to find something, that's the only thing they're thinking about that they're focused on. Why would they look around to see what she may have left behind? It looked like a break and enter to get something out of there. It makes sense. If you put yourself in that situation, it makes total sense. Also, how Felicity put the feed on a loop so Caden doesn't find out anymore of what's going on. At least they reacted to it properly. Even though later in the episode, it appears that Caden had a way to break through that. And we see him kind of watching them again. But I still enjoyed it. And you had already mentioned, I enjoyed how they dealt with that situation right away. And Felicity's like, don't worry, I put it on a loop. It's just constant, you know, stuff he's already seen. So.
Yeah.
Just anyway, like I was jumping all over the place, movie. But there, you know.
Yeah. Here are my thoughts. I don't think all of the newbies are being whiny babies. I think like two of them are. I think Dinah's all right. but you mentioned that they're kind of being treated like children. Here's my take on that. In the sense that they are not pulling their own weight, that they are greatly at risk, like they could be kidnapped, killed, whatever, at any time, and OTA is constantly having to protect them, spending long nights staying up trying to protect them without any help. In that sense, they are like children. They are the same type of liability that William is, because OTA cares about them and is having to go to great lengths, like sacrificing their own lives, sleep, health, etc., to try to protect these three who are not helping them. Now, Dinah's doing a great job as a cop. Cool. Curtis is helping with the tech. Cool. You know, like small things, and that's fine. But like we've seen since these newbies were brought on that like Renee would refer, like kind of jokingly and disrespectfully, but would refer to Oliver and Felicity as like mom and dad. Like Curtis would joke about like mom and dad having a discussion. And so when Felicity has to come in, and we've seen Felicity probably more than the rest of them, like really strongly care about these people. Like Curtis is like her best friend. You know, yeah. Dinah is, as far as we know, like Felicity's only female friend. And we've seen Felicity take Dinah's side quite a lot. Like Felicity supported Dinah being the leader of the team, which is really big, you know, like Felicity, I think, cares about Dinah and looks up to Dinah quite a lot. And Felicity would be crushed if she was to lose somebody else. So she's coming in where she knows, just by virtue of like being Oliver's wife and having these newbies kind of like, she was actually the one that trained them. Like Oliver didn't that much. Like Felicity had to like kind of help them assimilate into the team, that she's coming at this as like a mama bear. And she's not happy with these people being at risk. Like these are kids putting themselves at risk, you know? And like, if you've ever seen it, like seen like a mom yell at their kid when their kid's running out into the street or something like that, that is what I saw from her, where like, if she had been sort of like, okay, like do your own thing. Like, cause Oliver kind of was like, not going to get involved. And like you said, he accepted their answer right away. And that was fine. Like, I don't think he really wanted at least some of them back on his team anyways. But with Felicity, like, actually caring about them as people and having that present, I think she had to react strongly. Otherwise, we would kind of be left to believe she didn't really care, because she knows probably more than the rest of them how at risk they are. Like Diggle has to be cool about it, because he's not going to beg anymore and he's going to side with Oliver's decision. And Felicity also sided with his decision. But I think when she reacts like that, that's her being like a mama bear.
Okay, you know what? You make a good point. Like, I don't disagree with you at all. That certainly explains her emotions and where they're coming from. And yeah, essentially, Oliver's never been good at expressing his emotions anyway, and Diggle's kind of been right with him on that. So Oliver's not going to try too hard to sway them, where he's like, okay, that's your decision, go figure it out on your own kind of thing. Whereas Felicity, being part of the trio, she is the emotion. She is the
right,
that type of support for the team. She always has been for Diggle and Oliver. So, yeah, I get you. I get you. She's just extending that towards the newbies, because they have been part of the team, so she does care. And I guess she's just upset with what the decisions they're making.
But if you remember that episode where Oliver and Diggle were fighting, and she was like, you guys are staying down here in this cave until you work it out, and I'm leaving, and don't come up until you guys are bros again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they did. I felt like she talks to Oliver and Diggle sometimes that way, because like they're cool, you know, like they, you know, like when you're close to somebody, you're allowed to hear that sort of tough love from them. And you know, it's because they like actually care about you. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that was her trying to extend that to the newbies of like, you guys are going to die and we don't want you to. Like, I've stayed up 21 nights in a row trying to keep you from dying. Like, help me help you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think
that's what I got from it.
Yeah, I see your point. But I think their OTA is not just protecting them. They're protecting the city. They just happen to put more effort in towards protecting their team members, because obviously they're close friends and allies. But I think it's still falling under the umbrella of their watching out for the entire city as well. So
and
I think,
like, not 20 minutes later, Dinah was knocked out in a ditch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they're at risk.
And she didn't even see that coming. And I know some fans were a little bit up, but we'll talk about that scene in a minute here. It's just, I think for me, maybe it was Felicity's, okay, she's upset with their decision and she's coming at them with this, we're trying to protect you as well. I think maybe it just came out a little bit too, we know better than you type of attitude. And that is what I think the new team is maybe reacted to. Like, who says you guys know better than us and you can tell us what to do? I think that is maybe the sticking point between them. So if they can smooth that out somehow.
I mean, if the new team does not recognize that Oliver, Diggle, and Felicity do know better than them, then what was the point of them even joining? Like, we've all, like, from an audience perspective, of course we know Oliver, Diggle, and Felicity have been through, like, five times as much hell as the newbies. And the newbies have experience. Otherwise, why would they even be on the team? Like, they all have valuable fighting experience and valuable whatever. But why would they be falling under Oliver, Diggle, and Felicity's leadership at all unless they recognized what they had been through? And if they don't recognize and appreciate what they've been through, why are they even trying to join? You know, there's other people. They can get Roy back. Thea could be in the field. They can recruit somebody new. Like, they could do any of that. Somebody who will recognize, like, this is not their, like, no pun intended, this is not their show. Like, they're here to, like, learn and support. And yes, they get, like, these magnificent hero moments of their own. They all have, but it's not their, like, team that they're leading. Dinah's had a moment of leading the team, you know. Curtis has definitely headed up some missions. Renee has had a few moments where he was slightly less than annoying, but, like, they're not the leader.
No, and I don't think they completely unacknowledged, like, they don't acknowledge that. I think that's still there. It's the emotions involved with not being treated as equals on the team.
I
being treated like, okay, well, if you're going to surveil us, then surveil all of us, dig into everybody. Right. I think that it's the emotions from that is causing this type of reaction. But I still think they respect OTA with their experience and being leaders of the team. I think that's still there, because that's, like you said, that's the reason they came to the team. That's why they wanted to be part of it. They just felt that after all this time they've put in, they should maybe have been treated a little bit more on the equal side.
I think it was Curtis that said the whole, I don't remember if it was this episode or the mid-season finale, where he was saying, like, you put surveillance on us and not on Diggle and Felicity. And I'm just like, do you think Oliver is going to, like, put surveillance on his wife? Like, what? That just was so funny to me. Yeah. Like, you think, but, like, but he's married to Felicity. You're not going to be treated the same way as he would treat his wife. Like, that. And you think he's going to, like, suspect Diggle the same way he would? That just felt really odd. And especially coming from Curtis, who, like, I know we'll get into this when we talk more about the new Team Arrow, but,
and that,
like,
that might be the
Curtis is, like,
reaction.
Fed GPS trackers to people without their permission. Like, he's not somebody to talk about unwarranted surveillance.
All right, well, let's pause on that, because I know you got another rant coming up. So let's just finish off.
Oh, I do.
Let's finish off this last point here that you wanted to ask.
Yeah, about Thea and Lance. Yeah, well, Thea and Lance, I know they're not officially OTA, but it kind of feels like they are, because their longevity to the team, you know, and Thea's Oliver's sister and all that. I really love their scenes together in this episode, but a lot of their interactions. Now tell me if you don't feel the same way. It felt like a prelude to a send-off, which made me sad. What did you think?
Oh boy, it's hard to say. You're reading my mind. I'm going to tell you that right now. Because I thought the exact same thing and wanted to ask you something similar. I thought it was nice to see Thea back at work with Lance. That whole father-daughter relationship is so nice with them.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have much family stuff on this show right now, so that's just wonderful. But here we have Lance wanting to save Earth 2 Laurel, or he wouldn't forgive himself if he didn't try, because he thinks he saw something in her. And we've talked about that possibility with her, and we agreed that she'd be better staying evil, as it would weaken the whole arc if they redeem her. So, where my mind went is, could this be the sign of the end for Lance on the show?
Oh, okay.
For Quentin Lance. I'm looking at it. Was this the start of his demise? Or will he end up saving Laurel and bring her over to whatever good side there is for her to be on? The feeling that I got it with that little moment in the office with them is that, this might be Lance's end.
Yeah, I feel like either Thea or Lance, right?
Yeah, well, this is going right into your next question, because for me with Thea, it's hard to say what her path is going to be, because we hear her saying that she isn't ready for the field yet, or she's not ready for field work, but she didn't say the word yet. She hesitated on that. And it kind of left me feeling like they're just addressing it, but not confirming anything. I mean, would they put her out there too early in the field and then she gets hurt again? Or are they just acknowledging what fans want, but ultimately are not going to do anything with her because due to her contract restrictions or whatever? It was a really weird kind of unsettling feeling with the way she was saying things. I'm like, I don't know what they have planned for her. It's almost like the actress is saying, yeah, I know everybody wants me to be out in the field and be speedy again, but I don't really want to do all that physical stuff anymore, so I'm just going to play my role out here in the office with Lance, and that'll be the end of that. It was a weird feeling.
Yeah. I would love for Thea to stay, be chief of staff, be speedy once in a while, any of that. I won't go into it, because I know I've talked about this a lot before, about how I think Thea is a very important part of the show, part of Oliver's journey.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. It felt like this is a prelude to a send-off to one of them.
Right. Yep.
And I don't think they would send off Lance.
No. Eh? You so okay. I was feeling Lance and you feeling Thea.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I shouldn't borrow trouble before it happens, but something I'm you're with me on that. It sounds like something about their storyline feels like something bad's going to happen, or something sad is going to happen.
And then what would that be? Would it be actually killing one of them off, or just writing one of them off? Yeah.
I think, well, I mean, we do know, I'm trying to remember if you know this or not. Is this a spoiler for you? Surely you've seen it. It's been posted in the group several times.
I don't know. I'm not recalling what you're hinting at. So.
Well, if any of you are like really, really, really good about like not paying attention to spoilers, just like mute me for 5 seconds. But if you've been on social media, you know that Roy is returning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if that's going to tie into Thea's storyline.
Yeah. Well, it has to. It obviously has to. Come on. Thea and Roy, that's her love that got away, and she's never really been able to, you know, find solid ground after that. So.
Yeah. And I know in the mid-season finale, they even have her mention him at the wedding.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Yeah, we'll have to see. Unsure what they're going to do with that. But yeah, no, there's a feeling in the air. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
There is a feeling.
All right. Well, I know we've talked a lot about new Team Arrow already. We kind of talked about them the same time we were talking about old Team Arrow. Mm-hmm. But just in case we have any final thoughts... I may have some thoughts about New Team Arrow. I just thought I'd open the floor.
Right, get it off your chest.
Okay, you want me to start first with my rant?
Yeah.
Okay, this is me being really salty. Okay. Normally I write out questions, you guys. Like, I'll put like a discussion point and then I'll put questions. I got to New Team Arrow and I just like ranted. There's not even a question. It ends in all caps lock. I'm so sorry. Okay. Yeah,
she's yelling at me on the notes. It's funny.
Okay. Curtis fed Felicity a GPS tracker because he didn't trust her answer about what she was doing with Helix, and now he's complaining about the team having surveillance on him. That makes absolutely no sense to me. He also knows full well that they run surveillance on everybody for their own protection and to protect themselves. If they didn't, they would not be a very good team. Dinah is willingly sort of dating somebody who tried to kill the team mere weeks ago, is keeping secrets, which she just hounded Diggle about before, and is mad at the team for telling her that he's working with Kate and James when he, like, 20 minutes later, leaves her knocked out in a ditch. They're trying to protect her. Wild Dog repeatedly missed custody hearings that Oliver and the team sacrificed to get him, has been routinely disrespectful to Oliver, Diggle, and Felicity, despite them saving his life many times, protecting his daughter, and then the second he decides he does want his daughter, he sells out Oliver, attempting to get Oliver sent permanently away into prison, away from his son and wife. And then now, in this episode, he has the nerve to complain about them not trusting him. He just sold them out. He tried to get Oliver sent to jail, and the team disbanded. And two members of the team are still willingly working with him instead of working with Oliver, Diggle, and Felicity. He's the whole reason they had to do surveillance on everyone. He partnered with the person trying to get them all sent to jail. And he's like, why don't you trust me? I don't understand any of this. That's, yeah. There's not even a question there. That's just like, what are they doing?
Is this where you want me to interject now?
Yes.
I didn't want to interrupt you.
Talk me down off the ledge.
Well, let's see if I can diffuse the heat a little bit here. All right. So let's talk about Curtis first. So I think Curtis feels betrayed because he's been there the longest with them. And especially with Felicity working for her at Palmer Tech, he feels their friendship alone should have been enough to not think he could do that to them. So I can see his side from that angle. He has no reason to, no one to protect. Yeah, he followed Felicity, but she was being a little bit crazy when doing, what was the name of that?
Helix.
Yes.
Helix.
Helix. She was kind of being a little bit crazy and out of character, whereas he never was. So they don't really have any reason to...
I mean, he was really out of character in the episode where they had surveillance on him.
No, but I mean before that, he was not acting out of character.
He got drunk and was acting mad at the team, and that was the whole reason they suspected him.
Yeah, right? but still, up to that point, he wasn't doing anything to really be suspect at all, in my opinion.
Right.
Like I said, his friendship to Felicity, they're best friends, they worked here a long time. That alone should have written him off, saying no way.
Right.
Now Dinah, can I just say how happy I was when she walked on the scene in the police station right in the beginning of the episode? So I can easily forgive her being so torn in her feelings, because you have to remember, in her origin story, Vincent was the love of her life that she thought she lost. Now, here he is, all banged up, kind of messed up in the head, but it seems he's trying, and he's fooling her at a time when she is messed up from the Team Arrow fallout. So he really is kind of a beacon of familiar comfort for her. I don't think she was fully going back to him, as I said earlier. I think she was testing the old waters, seeing what might be there. Wouldn't you, if your soulmate suddenly showed up again when you thought they were dead? And yeah, OTA also treated her like crap when they thought it was her, so I cannot blame her one bit for her reactions towards them.
Oh yeah, they were way too harsh on her.
Exactly.
When she was not the one that betrayed them, and then the second they found out it was Wild Dog, literally like 2 minutes later, they're like, wait, maybe we should forgive him. It's like, you just dragged her. Like, you were like flipping tables when you thought it was Dinah. The second you find out it's Wild Dog, you're like, well, maybe he can be redeemed. I was so frustrated about that. Okay, continue. Sorry.
Well, now, so yeah, I'm totally team Dinah. Unless she does something completely off the wall stupid, I'm going to defend her till I die. So,
anyway. Well, she's also still one of the only ones, I mean, Curtis a little bit, but of the team in a measurable way, she's the only one of the trio measurably continuing to show heroic values by like still being a cop and still like fighting evil.
Right.
So that was kind of something I was looking for in the three of them. Right. And of the three, she still has that. Okay, sorry. Continue for real this time.
All right. Well, see, now, Wild Dog, I don't know if I can turn the tables for you much on this one, but I do have a couple thoughts.
Okay.
He's a mixed bag for me as well. I've come to like him a lot more than when they first introduced him. He was my least favorite out of all the newbies back when we had Ragman and Evelyn and stuff. He was my least favorite. I've come to like him a lot more. And that's based on all the scenes that we got with him and Lance. We absolutely loved him working with Lance. That's where he started to grow on us. And then we loved the bromance happening with him and Curtis. So Wild Dog has grown on me. But your points are valid. He tends to forget what the team has done for him, and he's always being reckless in the street, which is my least favorite part about him. He's very self-centered with his decisions in the field. But I think that's based because he's been a lone wolf for so long. He was Wild Dog on his own for who knows how long before the team picked him up. So I give him a little bit of leeway to that, that he's done it. He's done this on his own for quite a while, and it's hard for him to let go of those tendencies of making decisions for himself in the field. So I give him a little bit of leeway there. But in this episode, the fact that he was feeling guilty and then excited when him and Curtis figured out that it could be Caden that set him up kind of actually gave me a bit of redemption for him. Seeing how much it bothered him, by the weight, like how much the weight of his choice was weighing on him and what he did to the team, that actually made me feel, like I said, a little bit of redemption. Made me feel like, okay, he's not so much just a hothead. He's feeling guilty about what he did. He's struggling with it. And he's confessing.
He felt bad for selling out every single person who has ever cared about him or tried to protect him and his daughter.
Yeah.
But he didn't agree to partner with them. And when the person who he tried to sell out apologized to him, he didn't accept that apology. The person he tried to sell out to prison away from his wife and family came to him and apologized to him, and he did not accept that.
Well, if you actually really tear apart that scene, like scrutinize that scene, he actually didn't say very much. It was Curtis and Dinah that took the lead. I think Renee was kind of just being the follower there. He's like, I think if Curtis and Dinah said, okay, we'll accept your apology, I think he would have went with them. They're the ones that said, you know what? We're not ready to accept this. We're going to go out on our own. And he just kind of said, yeah, let's go. Like, I think he was more the follower in that situation. So
Curtis kind of confused me in that scene, because when the scene starts, Curtis starts by saying like, oh, I'm so glad we're all in the same room again. And then he ends by not accepting the apology. And I'm like, Curtis, you're a smart guy. What did you think was going to happen in this scene? Like,
well, that's
what did you expect?
Yeah. And that's Curtis. I think out of the three of them, he's the one struggling the most with it, because he sees them as his friends and his family. And they're the ones that he has cared a lot about, especially since he broke up with his husband. This has become his family. So he's struggling with the personal life being separate from the heroic life with them. And that's why I think that's what he meant. Like, it feels good to all be together again, because that's his family. That's what I think he's referring to.
See, I can forgive Curtis on paper, because his whole argument for leaving was hypocritical, because he's done the same thing to them. So like, he can say like, you should trust me because I'm whatever, but like, he hasn't trusted them back. And I don't fault him for that, because I think that's an important part of, you know, the team. But I can forgive him on paper, because at least he continued working to help Diggle, and that is technically supporting the team. So while he may not be like fully, I mean, I really think he is pulling his weight, because they're letting him, he's letting them use his T-spheres. He's letting them use his tech, and he's still supporting Diggle. And so he's still sort of pulling his weight. Like, he knows he's a liability and a risk. And even if he's not out there in the field, he's still in some way trying to like help and like not just be dead weight. I can pretty easily forgive Dinah, because I think the team treated her really badly, unfairly, to the point of, I would almost call it sexist, the difference in the way they treated her when they thought she had betrayed them, like because of the Vincent thing, and the way they treated Renee. That I can easily see her not being able to get over that, because she's right. That was a completely unfair difference.
Yeah.
And she is continuing to still be a cop. She still is continuing to like answer their calls and show up, you know. And if I get the vibe, I could be wrong, but I get the vibe from her where if there was like a tangible thing that they needed from her of like, oh, hey, like, since you're a cop, like, can you, you know,
she'd help him out.
Do you have surveillance on this guy, or have you caught this guy, you know, whatever, like, she would give them that information. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's really easy for me to forgive her. Also, you know, it's Dinah, like, whatever. But Wild Dog, though, it's not even, to this point, it's not even about forgiveness. I just don't think he is a hero in that I don't think he's a good person. Because I had, like, I'm comparing Wild Dog's, like, behavior, trustworthiness, whatever, to people like Slade or Malcolm Merlyn. Those two people who we conclusively think of as like villain slash anti-hero, you know, like they've been like the big bad villain. Those two people would not sell out Oliver away from his son. Those two people would not be like, well, I'm going to go like consult with the FBI and get you arrested in front of you. Like those, they've tried to support Oliver staying with his family and support Oliver staying with his son. And the fact that Wild Dog doesn't even live up to like the morals of Slade and Malcolm Merlyn, he's just not a hero to me anymore. He's not somebody that needs to be on the team. It's not like he's a bad character. You know, this has nothing to do with the actor or the character or whatever. It's just he does not have the same moral code that like Diggle or Curtis or Dinah or Felicity or any of them have. So that's, yeah.
Well, I won't throw him in the same bag as a Slade and Merlyn because they're, for the points that you just said, but what I think I'm trying to think of a defense for Wild Dog in some sense that they could save him. And I'm calling back to what we know about Wild Dog before he came to the team. Like he had a family, he had a wife and a daughter and was quite a normal guy trying to raise the family, protect them and all that. And then there was some drug trouble and his wife was heavily involved in drugs and he had to deal with the drug gangs and all that stuff, and he lost his wife due to it all, which sent him on his path to become Wild Dog, to become a vigilante, to go deal revenge. He wasn't so much wanting to be a hero. He was like, I'm out for revenge. I'm going to get all bad drug people and stuff. And I think that led him down this crazy path of not giving a damn, and his family comes first. And So with a background like that, it makes it a little bit understandable that he hasn't fully come around from that yet, you know, to where he feels he can trust and do good things. I think he's on a much longer redemption path. And it's not even so much redemption. It's a long path to get back to the person he was a long time ago. Because you got to imagine what he lost. He lost his wife to drugs and drug dealers in a really, really bad you know, situation. And he lost his daughter to that too, because they took her away from him when he tried to deal with it himself. So that's quite a situation to be coming from, which gives me a little bit of understanding to why he is the way he is now. I think he's just having a hard time coming out of that, because we don't really know the timeline of how long he was dealing with that, how long he was Wild Dog before tracking down drug dealers and stuff. So that for me gives me just a little bit of I'm trying to save the character Wild Dog in my own mind so I can enjoy having him on the show, because he's had some great stuff. So
I would not mind him being on the show, joining the villain team.
See that? I don't know. I don't think he can be a villain. Like I said, you just look at his history.
I think he thinks he's a hero, and that bothers me.
He's a hero with the wrong motivation. He's motivated by revenge. And I think if Oliver could connect with him on that, because Oliver has struggled with a few things like that himself. So I think if Oliver could connect with him.
There's only so much you can connect with somebody who's like, if their fundamental flaw is like being self-centered and ungrateful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, I don't want to like beat this into the ground or anything, because I guess we'll see in upcoming episodes. But I think if he doesn't recognize like what the team has done for him, like trying to like save and protect his daughter, and is willing to sell them out, and then comes back around and doesn't realize what the team is doing for him by like a guy who he tried to get permanently separated from his son is standing in front of him and apologizing to him, and he turns down that apology. Like, that's just two different instances of being like almost bizarrely ungrateful and almost bizarrely out of touch, that I'm just wondering how you would come back from that. And maybe they will, like, well, show him coming back from that in some way. But
I think you're going a little too far with it. Because we saw him feeling guilty. I think that's the start of him, or not even the start. He does acknowledge and understand what Oliver and the team has done for him. And that is why he is feeling guilty, why he is uncomfortable with the situation they're in right now, and why he got excited that they had a chance to prove that he had no choice. It wasn't his fault that, Caden James set him up to only have one path to take. So I think that is showing us that he is understanding what the team has done for him, that this is where the guilt is coming from. So we'll see what they do with it. We will.
Thanks for talking me down off the ledge. I appreciate that.
How about some transmissions?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, that was good discussion. Good stuff.
Yeah, it was. All right. I'm curious to hear what everybody else thought now.
Yeah, let's see where everyone else is standing on Arrow after a good long hiatus. And we're going to kick it off with a voicemail from Destiny Dazzler.
Hi, Arrow Squad. It's Destiny Dazzler. I just got done watching the episode. I absolutely loved it. I love the fight sequences in this episode. I thought they were just super well shot and it was like super cool. I just loved it from a technical aspect. I'm super nervous now that the team has split into two teams. I feel like it's going to make everyone more vulnerable and put everyone in a lot more danger. I was super happy that Thea was back, and I hope that she puts on her speedy costume again sometime soon. I miss her being out in the field. I am really nervous and concerned for Dinah and the whole vigilante ex-boyfriend thing. I feel like it's not going to end very well for her at all, and she's in a lot more danger than she realizes. I'm super excited that John's chip now works and he can get back to doing what he loves. So I'm excited to see where these storylines go the rest of the season. And I'm just happy Arrow's back. I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.
So are we.
We're so excited Arrow's back.
It's so good to hear your voice and hear that you're happy and just feeling warm feelings towards the show being back. You know what? She brought up a point that just made me think of something. When she says she's worried for Dinah and her reasons why, when we see Vincent and Caden sitting there talking while he's cleaning his gun, and he's like, don't worry, I know all the buttons to push with Dinah, and if I have to, deal with her, I will. That makes me now that struck a feeling of worry too, because is he totally just playing her? Is there no emotion at all left in him? He's completely acting and trying to trick her, and he will hurt her if necessary. That's a good.
I don't know. I feel like the reason I'm concerned for Dinah now, in the grand sense, I'm not concerned in that I think they would kill her off, because I don't think they would kill her off. But the reason why I feel like she's in a lot of danger is because she's kind of got the villain stacked against her, doesn't she? Because she has Black Siren as her paired villain, which is how the season started. Mm-hmm. But now she also has Vigilante, and while almost everybody else sort of has like their paired villain, she's kind of got two, and she's also separated from the protection of the team. So definitely somebody in danger.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I don't want to worry about her. She's
go save her, Flash.
Yes, I should. After all, I am her favorite. I should be the one saving her.
You are. We have audio proof of that.
All right. Well, next up we have an email from Stormy Woods. You want to take this one?
Sure. Okay. Stormy writes in. She says, the episode left me feeling frustrated, but I did have positives. First of all, getting to see OTA have so many scenes together again made me happy. Dig and Felicity specifically, that friendship is valuable to the show. She says, Oliver kicking butt in the field solo is always a pleasure because he's such a fantastic fighter. And I did love the mentions of Helena. She's referring to the Huntress. Mm-hmm. Huntress. Can she come back and avenge her family member's murder? And she also says she loved seeing Oliver shoot Black Siren twice. The shot that chained her to the wall was badass.
That was my favorite part, too.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. She goes on to mention things she didn't like. She did not like the attitudes of Renee, Dinah, and Curtis, comparing OTA to Caden James. Really, that's uncalled for. Oliver apologized and owned up to his mistakes, and that still wasn't good enough for them. Renee talks about respect, but he had a lot of moments of being disrespectful himself. He's mad when found out for being a traitor. He isn't trusted. That makes no sense to me. That's a good point. Oliver and Dig have kids too, and you're willing to send them to prison. Why are Curtis and Dinah fine with Renee snitching? Because it exposes them also. That's a good question. Dinah really had the gall to suggest Oliver lied about Vince. You already knew this guy had tried to kill your teammates for going on 2 seasons, yet you won't believe he is also on Team Villain. Yeah, I don't know. As for Curtis, when can Felicity remind him, you tracked me in season 4 and I didn't behave the way you are? Those are a lot of really good points.
Yeah, well, like I said, in Dinah's defense, I think it's just she was testing the waters to see if this is her Vince that she can maybe trust again, because right now she's feeling pretty alone. And yeah, he's the closest thing to a sense of comfort that she might have right now. So I think she was maybe a little bit blinded by that.
Right.
And then for the team to
I don't know. Like, I don't like the way the team treated Dinah, but it's one thing to be like, hey, you yelled at me for 30 seconds and it was uncalled for, versus being like, hey, you tried to kill me and all my friends. You know, like, it just seems like it's not like there's 2 equal sides for her to go between. But I get what you're saying. Yeah. I understand that that's her storyline.
Yeah, and it makes sense to me. Like, for them to tell her that Vincent is working with Caden James, I mean, it's just an emotional reaction. She's like, "What? No way! How can that be?" Because they found out before she did. So I think that's maybe the angle. Right. Like she didn't see it, so she's probably more upset with herself that, you know, she didn't catch that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is which. She goes to visit him, and she's, you know, smacks him across the face pretty hard too. So I think that's her taking out that emotion on him. So,
right.
Yeah.
I do think that kind of evens the playing field though. You know, like, they had an uncalled for reaction to her when they thought that she was the traitor, but she also had an uncalled for reaction to them when they were trying to protect her. So I think that on her ground, I think the field is even. On Curtis's ground, the field is definitely even. Yeah. Wild dog, I don't care about. Okay, continuing with Stormy's email.
Yeah.
She says, the last little gripe is about Lance. I really like him, but the Black Siren thing is already growing so old on me. She's not your daughter, Quentin, and she's a psycho. She loves killing innocent people, and she's going to continue doing that. I was happy to have Thea back, but I'm bummed she's being dragged into this. She's already been down this can. She's already been down this can a villain be redeemed storyline with Malcolm. The evil he committed outweighed the very few decent things he did. Lance has Sarah, with Felicity and Thea being like daughters. He doesn't need the psycho version of Laurel. And then she says, spoiler, because she didn't want to spoil you on this. I'm super excited to have, again, mute me for like 5 seconds if you don't already know this, Roy officially coming back. Can't wait to see him. Again, mute me if you don't want to hear this.
Well, we talked about
OTA
it.
And Thea.
Yeah, talked about that a while ago. Well, because he tweeted himself about possibly coming back, so we had talked about that. Yeah, that's not too bad of a spoiler. But again, with Lance as well, I totally agree with her that he has Thea here to you know, kind of take on that daughter role and stuff. But again, Lance is really, he's coming off of a rough time. He just finished solving his drinking problem. And all of a sudden, you know, he's lost Laurel, and Sarah's nowhere to be found most of the times. And he's to have Laurel come back, like, because he was pretty much like, because remember, he did shoot her to defend Dinah on the island. So there, he does know it's not his Laurel, but it's those little subtle moments where she sees him as her father, because he was never there for her on Earth too. So that they've both had these little moments where they're like, what if? And I think that's what he's having a hard time letting go, because he's like, I know there's a part of her in there. I can see it. And it's because she has actually shown it to him. It's not him being crazy. But I do agree. We need, like we've both said, she needs to stay evil. And maybe the part that's going to finally seal the deal for Lance is that she does either hurt Thea and he comes to Thea's rescue like a father would, and that's the turning point, or maybe she ends up killing him and there's a really heartbreaking scene with it involved with that. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know.
But thanks for that email. Awesome stuff in there. Holy.
Yeah. A lot of good points. Always good right. to hear from Stormy.
Yeah. Next one we got is from I'm Just Here for Felicity, and I'll read this one.
Okay.
And they say, so why is Evil Laurel wearing a wig in the opening? Who's she trying to hide from? More Evil Laurel, please. Do you think that actually was a wig that Katie was wearing?
I do. I think okay. that...
Wasn't a new hairdo?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know. I haven't seen a recent picture of her, but I'm pretty sure that's a wig.
All right. So she says, Thea, you have been sorely missed. It's so great having a voice of reason right now. If they're going to tease Huntress this hard, I want some payoff in the form of Jessica guesting. Yes, it's a neat Easter egg regardless, but I'd even be better visually. Yeah, I think the fact that they just dropped her name, whether it's just an acknowledgement to the fans that they haven't forgotten about Huntress or she might actually come back, who knows? I think it's a cool character they should bring back for an episode. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
She continues, while Felicity got me into Arrow, I have to give this MVP to Thea as she was just like a breeze of fresh air each scene she was in. I don't know how long we'll have Willa on the series, but I'm enjoying her so far as long as she's here. No redeeming Evil Laurel. Maybe it was just me, but I hated Dinah being the dupe in the situation when John and Felicity told her about Vince. Too often the female character is the blinded by forgiveness one. I'm fine with Dinah saying Vince worked against criminals, not with, so she questions Oliver as a way for them to bring up the whole trust plot. But beyond that, she should not have been that surprised as she knew he was shady the moment she saw him again. Yes, forgiveness can be good, but why couldn't Dinah be open to that while also being cautious because her instincts are saying something shady's up with him? Yeah, you're bringing up, I know, it's tough. I want to defend Dinah. Yeah. It's a tough situation.
Of our heroes are flawed. It's normal.
And it's good. It's good to have flaws. I just really dislike that part of this episode and against her reuniting with him, even if he saves her or others in the finale, because again, just because he does good doesn't mean she has to get back with him. I'd love to hear your thoughts on handling of this plot point so far. I think we've handled it pretty good.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't want to see Dinah get back with him. I don't think he is redeemable. I think there's something too messed up with him. I think she needs to figure out her feelings right now. Kind of in the sense that we're thinking Wild Dog isn't redeemable because of what he's doing. I think she needs to figure out her feelings that Vince is not going to be redeemable. There's no way back for him as well.
Right. I don't mind Dinah having this time of like independence, though, because she seems like an independent character. And I kind of, I feel a little bit about her right now that I felt about Sarah back in season 2, where I felt like it made sense for her to come work with the team at times and support them in fights. But perhaps it made sense, at least at some points, for her to not necessarily be on the team, but more like help that they bring in.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I guess I should say maybe it's even more like trying to redeem Black Siren when she isn't our Laura Lance. So trying to redeem her is maybe this feeling Lance is struggling with that. Maybe that's more what Dinah's struggling with. She's got to realize that this isn't her Vincent. This guy has changed. He's different. He's a bad guy. So we talked about that a few episodes ago, whether he's on a redemption arc. Is he going to die saving her? Or what might happen. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see if he's going to stick true to what he said to Kate and James there, that he'll deal with her if he has to. We'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
So she finishes off here. Renee saying couldn't trust the team still was really hypocritical. I do think that there were fair points made by Dinah, and Curtis nailed Oliver perfectly with his speech about playing by his own rules. Points for Oliver for being mature enough not to disagree with this, but overall the scene left me feeling meh. Watching as it felt like a mix of organic drama with some characters forced drama overall, just to keep the team apart currently instead of letting some members stay and others walk until they can combine again into a unit that works again. Yeah, I can understand what she's feeling there. I mean, you're basically touching on everything we were going back and forth about. But I myself am okay with them being split right now. I like that it's not being fixed right away, as we talked. This is another scene I'm really looking forward to you two discussing. Okay, well, I guess I just did. You got anything less to say?
I don't know. I understand her points, though, and I think we covered a lot of them in our discussion points. Especially the part about this being organic. I think there's a mix between it being – I'm not saying it's inorganic. I'm just saying the argument, the two sides do not seem balanced to me. So that can probably come across as inorganic, perhaps.
Okay. Well, hopefully we covered enough of it for you there. She says, Thea, just because he saved you doesn't mean Malcolm changed. Again, no redeeming evil Laura. Play them hard, evil Laurel, if they try. Using Helix feels like a setup to get caught, as to why wouldn't Caden keep eyes on his places. Part of me really wants to see Caden hack Felicity and John's chips to take them down or make them do things they wouldn't, as this is a perfectly timed story to do that without feeling forced, and it'd serve as a reminder to fans who may have forgotten Felicity is chipped as well. And while it's overall good, it could be used against them as well. That would be, geez, that would be kind of crazy to see if Caden knows about their chips and then hacks them. I mean, I guess just causing pain or causing them to be disabled at a moment of need or crisis, that would be kind of crazy, yeah.
That would be wild.
Wow, some very good points, very, very strong thoughts there. Thanks again for that email as well. I'm just here for Felicity.
Yeah.
All right. Our listeners have really, really had a lot of deep thoughts here. We've got some good, strong, very long feedback. So yeah, this is awesome, guys. Our next one is from Scarlet Vixen, and you can take this one.
Sure. Scarlet Vixen writes in, says, we are back, Arrow Squad. I used the break to catch up on other shows, so that was nice, but I'm happy my show's back on. I would give this episode an 8 out of 10, and my problems with it are listed below. Now, on to my pros and cons. Pros, seeing OTA back in action, Diggle and Felicity scenes. I'm always here for those and want more. I enjoyed Oliver's stance at the end when he wished the newbies well and seemed to have really meant it. And I think that shows a lot of growth for him as a character. Action and fight scenes were amazing. And thank goodness they found the dang camera bug. Cons.
Well, hold back on, to the hold camera. On. Like those are good points. Yeah, I think she's right. In where we were all very happy to see about those. Yeah, like finding the bug. The fight scenes were really good. Just seeing OTA back together, of course. And Diggle and Felicity, there's a real strong bond between the two of them. It's like a brother and sister thing that we don't often mention. And it's fantastic. So, yeah, good pro points there for sure.
Strongly agree.
All right, cons.
Yeah, she says, back to the camera. The fact that they don't search the lair for those like once a week is something I can't wrap my head around, but I'm glad Felicity figured it out. I get really annoyed when they play Felicity's smarts down for whatever reason. Strongly agree. The newbies really got on my nerves in this episode. I kind of understand their issue with not being trusted. I'm sure it doesn't feel good, but the fact that they refuse to see Oliver's point of view on this is annoying, and the attitude they're giving Felicity and Diggle doesn't make any sense. Also, Renee sold out Oliver for his daughter. I don't know why Curtis and Dinah seem to be okay with that. I feel like they should tell him, look, dude, we get why you did it. You put your daughter first, but it wasn't cool. You should have came to one of us to help you out. Something along those lines. Now they want to start their own team, and Cammy said it on Twitter, if they show the noobs doing or being better at being a team than OTA, I will have some serious, serious problems with it. Yeah, so will I. That's exactly why I said that. At the end, Oliver laid his cards on the table, summed up the problems of their team, and there was blame to go around, more so on the noobs, in my opinion. But they don't think they did anything wrong, and that's the issue. If they can't take responsibility for their actions, why should OTA want to work with them? That's all my thoughts for now. Can't wait till next week. Talk to you later. And she has a second email after that. But first, just addressing this. Yeah, I think if we're supposed to see the newbies being immature, unfair, unwilling to see Oliver, Diggle, and Felicity's point of view, and for some reason okay with working with Renee, even though he clearly would sell them out over anything, no matter how much they protect him or support him, then I would have a serious problem with them being shown as like somehow being a better or even equal team, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's got points. I can't totally counter or argue that they're all very good points. And
yeah.
Yeah, I guess the newbies were a little bit annoying, and this is where the bit of immaturity comes in. And I think that's the difference they're trying to show between the new team and the OTA team, is that the OTA's got the experience, and the new team, and they are the new team. They were asked to join the team relatively at the same time, so that's why they're kind of sticking together. I can't fight the point about why they would trust Renee. Because it just showed Curtis understanding why he did what he did. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
Everybody understands why he did what they did, especially Oliver and Dickel would understand that because they have kids, but they still haven't sold each other out. And that's why they trust each other and not Renee.
And I hope the camera bug thing, I hope I've said enough to kind of calm everyone's mind on that, because it really doesn't bug me at all. I've tried to explain that so much as to for good reason why they didn't catch it and why they wouldn't look for it and stuff. So hopefully. But on to her second little email that she sent us.
Yeah. She says, oh, and one more thing. I forgot to add this to my first post. There have been a lot of questions on why Thea is not on a lot this season. I don't know if anyone has said this before, but I read an article from Mark Guggenheim that she's requested a deal like last season where she's not on as much. She's referring to a recurring deal. It could be Thea Willa is a bit worn out and wants a break, but he said he tries to honor all cast requests of things like that, so she's getting a break. I love Thea and would like to see her all the time, and at first I thought they were doing her wrong, but finding out it's her decision, I can respect that.
Yeah, I actually, that's the exact same article I brought up, I think at the beginning of the season. I talked about what we're going to be expecting from Thea, and those are the reasons why. So yeah, it's the actress's choice, which is why I question if we will even ever see her as Speedy again, because I remember also reading an article that Willa Holland does not like doing the action. She doesn't like doing all the training and having to stay in shape, and it's almost always a body double that does it for her. So she could be saying, yeah, I just don't want to do that anymore.
It's possible.
Yeah. All right. But thank you for that, Scarlet Vixen. On to our last email from Christy, and I'll take this one. Christy says, I'm annoyed that Oliver extended an Oliver Branch, admitting that he made mistakes and the newbies just brushed him off. I don't feel like the newbies have earned the right to just go off on their own. Didn't any of them hear the phrase stronger together? They even stole Oliver's signature bourbon toast. Yeah. I remember being really unsure about the newbies early in season 5, but then the show made me grow to love them. But now I'm just irritated by the behavior and hate to see all of that good work undone by childish behavior. I'm glad that they finally figured out they were being bugged, although I'm not sure how a biochip managed to interfere with a video camera. well, maybe that'll be explained. I don't know. Yeah, good question. I'm pleasantly surprised that the team found out who Kate and James' teammates were this early. I expected the team to remain in the dark for a while. Yeah, that's true. That's one thing I'm glad they didn't drag out. It's good that Oliver went in to attack their base thinking he's only going to get Kate, and they all showed up. So yeah, but I think at that point, Kate and James thought he had them surrounded. Oliver shot that cable arrow and got out of there. And I thought, so they probably weren't expecting to reveal themselves at that moment. So yeah, it's good for Team Arrow to learn.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially in previous seasons when they've kind of dragged it out, who the villains' identities are. At least this season, they're not doing that.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for all that fantastic feedback. It sounds for the most part, everyone's happy the show is back and mostly
so
happy
excited
with what's going. So yeah. Thank you, everybody. As for us, that kind of brings us to the end of a very long returning episode.
It was a pretty long one, wasn't it?
And that's okay. We had a lot to talk about, a lot to vent and diffuse and kind of figure out. I mean, we've had a hiatus, so we're just making up for lost time, right?
Yes, exactly. Next episode will be January 25th. The 11th episode of season 6 entitled We Fall.
Oh boy. Yes, these titles are definitely leading down possible paths. All right, everybody. Well, if you would like to be part of the show or get in touch with us or anything along those lines, just go to arrowsquad.com. All the connections and info and everything is there, as long as our personal info, if you'd like to reach out to us. Other than that, we will talk to you in a week. And hope the season just continues on rolling. This is The Flash, signing off.
And this is Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media at goldenspiralmedia.com.